Harihi Om. Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, so continuing with this atheistic Shankya. So in this atheistic Shankya system, he accepts three proofs: scent perception, inference, and scripture. These three are proof. There is nothing further to be known, because by these means all is known. Shankya Sutra 2.2.14 and 1.88. There is not much disagreement with things proved by sense perception and scripture, but in certain sutras he infers that Pradhan is the cause of the world. So these are the ones where he infers it?
Yeah, these are the three sutras okay. That mention that Pradhan is the cause.
Okay. Parimanat. Because of limited size, these are the products of Prakriti, which is unlimited.
Who's saying that?
That's not this is Shankya. Shankya is saying this. Then, Samanvayat, because they are similar to Pradhan in qualities, the other elements are its products. Shaktitas cha, because of its inherent Shakti, Pradhan can be the efficient cause. Shankya Sutra 130 to 132. Right, so they're trying to establish that the Pradhan being unlimited. And then you see everything within here is of limited size. And that because there are similar qualities, and because of the inherent potency in Prakriti, that Prakriti can be the cause of creation. Right? That's what they're putting together. Does that make sense? You know, it's like the house shook, you turned and looked, there was a frog there, so the frog made the house shake. Like that. This is what we're working with here, yes.
Maharaj, the Sankhya Sutra has been written by the atheist Kapila.
Yes. Yeah. Because the ones written by the son of Devahuti is in the Bhagavatam. So that'll be there.
And these purports have been given by Ishvara Krishna.
Sorry?
Whatever Kapila has written, the translation has been done by Ishvara Krishna.
The translation is by Ishvara Krishna.
Yeah, he's one of the disciples of atheistic Kapila.
He's one of the disciples of?
Atheistic Kapila. Disciples of the disciples.
And he translated into English?
The Sankhya Sutras of Kapila.
How long ago did that happen?
It just mentions some particular date.
Means some date means Shankya Sutra is like 5,000 years ago. He wrote them down like 4,800 years ago, or
I will find out a little more. The date. He's
okay. Adhikarana 1. Atheistic Shankya refuted. Rachana nupa patya. Dikaranam. Sutra reference 2.2.1-10. Adhikarana Prakashika. Okay. Here in this Adhikarana, the Sutrakar refutes the above points, since by doing so, atheistic Kapila's whole philosophy is consequently refuted. He proves that the Pradhan, being unconscious and therefore unintelligent, cannot be the creator of the universe. Pradhan is a balanced state of gunas. Hence, only when consciousness agitates Pradhan do the three modes of nature stir to initiate the general manifestation. Right? Because it's unconscious, so then how can anything happen? Nothing happens when you're unconscious. So only if consciousness does agitate the modes, then the modes of nature will start producing things. Does that make sense? Like the machine. It just sits there. It's unconscious. But when someone with consciousness comes along, they animate the machine and it does things.
Right? And now consciousness means living entity.
Yes. And so that means Krishna here. It means there's something that has to be. So Pradhan can't be the cause. Right? And the jivas can't either. So, you know. Yes.
So what they say is pretty much the same what scientists say. It was like sitting there, then
something happened, but they can't explain why it happened. Like if there's a big bang, why would there be a big bang?
Yeah.
You know, just by chance. And if it's chance, then why do they have laws of nature? The whole science is based on laws. Right? So chance doesn't make laws. You know? I mean the only thing of chance that you can say there's a law is called house wins. Right? Yeah, so the point is it's just a desire, because when you want something, then you don't really use your intelligence. So they're very intelligent people, but they'll only use their intelligence up to a point. And once they get to that point, they stop using their intelligence. Right? Because they just want it to be like that. So that's why only the Vaishnavas then can actually see things as they are. So that's the fun part, is that the jnanis are famous for being the most intelligent and most analytical in that, but actually only the Vaishnavas can be that. Right? But because they care about that so much, they make a big thing out of it. You know, it's like, have you ever seen sometimes these kind of like street circus performers? They set up a little circus right on the street, right? So do they ever just do something? No, they sit there and make a whole thing out of it and move their arms and do a whole, you know, like this and, you know, whatever they can get to get it. And then they do it, you know, because it only takes about 1 second. So, but they'll do this whole build up. So that's these guys like that. And so that's the thing. The materialist will always do this big build up, this big thing, because there's nothing there. So, yeah. Previous to this, the Sutrakar explained in Vedanta Sutra 143, Tad Adhi Natvad Artavat, that Pradhan is useful since it produces the effects world under the Lord's command, specifically the Lord's glance. It cannot do this single-handedly, since it is inert. Even if it is accepted that Pradhan can commence the creation on its own, the proposal does not stand, since Pradhan would have no intention in creating the universe. Because also, if you're unconscious, do you have any purpose? No, there's nothing to do. Okay. The Sutrakar at the very onset of this composition in Pada 1, of Adhyaya 1 in Vedanta Sutra 1.1.18. Kamachcha nanu mana peksha. Established that Prakriti is not the Anandamaya Purusha, because Prakriti is insentient and cannot desire anything. In fact, the text states that the Purusha has desire. Footnote 3. This would be an argument against the Mayavadis as well, since Nirguna Brahman does not have desires and thus cannot be the cause of anything, including Maya. Right? So nothing could come from Brahman. By their argument. The atheistic Shankya philosophies may argue that Pradhan is the sole cause of the universe, but in fact their theory states that Pradhan creates only when Purusha is near. Right? And so then where did Purusha come from? So the same problem like the Mayavadis. You know, the jiva is produced by Brahman being covered by illusion. Where's illusion from? Right? Oh, the jiva, that means they when they see themselves separate from Brahman, that produces illusion. Does that make sense? So the jiva is the one producing the illusion. If you ask where did the jiva comes from, it comes from illusion. And if you ask where illusion comes from, it comes from the jiva.
Chicken and the egg.
Sorry?
Chicken and the egg.
Yeah, well here yeah.
Who's first?
Yeah. Yeah, only Vaishnavas can answer that. It was the Prajapati. The Pajapati produced the chicken produced the egg.
So the chicken still.
Huh?
The chicken still.
The chicken still, okay, yeah, yeah. Except with Garuda, then there was an egg first, then grows Garuda. But there was a Pajapati before either. Thus, even the Shankya standpoint holds that matter does not act alone. Hence, the Supreme Lord is the supreme controller of material nature, the living entities, and their desires. Summary of Adhikarana 1. So, these are all problems in Sambandha, right? Because
yeah.
There's not a... They don't have this... There's no intention of surrendering to the Supreme Lord. So... It's like this. If you have the Supreme Lord and he's actually the controller of the material energy and the jiva and the cause of creation, then there one may feel, you know, that it would naturally arise the feeling to surrender to such a person. Right? So, since they don't want to surrender, you just get rid of that person. Right? Simple process. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like that... how you say, you know, in the big family picture, and there's that annoying relative that you somehow or another just get rid of in the picture, you know, you Photoshop them out or something. Or, yeah, so like that they're doing. Samyavadi Karna 1. Shamshaya, so their doubt. Is Pradhan the material cause and the efficient cause of the world or not? And then their reasoning. Pradhan is the material and efficient cause because it can be inferred that the gunas of the material world arise from the gunas of the Pradhan as the material cause. It is seen that the qualities in the effect are like a pot, are similar to the qualities in the cause. Right? So they're using the proper argument in the wrong to prove the wrong thing.
Yes.
Right? So that's why you always have to see is that never be distracted by that someone uses the same analogy or same example, you know, that's a proper or bona fide example that we may use, or that part of their process is exactly the same as we would use, right? You have to see what's their intent, what's their conclusion. That's the point. Because that's why you see Krishna Prabhupada starts in the Bhagavad Gita, in the introduction to the Gita, that the first point is that the spirit or the attitude has to be right. What's your purpose? What, you know, so from that then you can see what your goal is. Right? So their goal is not to surrender to the Lord, have nothing to do with the Lord, so he's just not even part of all this. They accept the scriptures and then they'll take those verses that support their philosophy. And other ones they won't discuss, right? Shastra is very vast, so they only take what they want. Is that
Maharaj, they are not innocent.
No.
They are more demoniac.
It means you have that, but at the same time, let's say the whole purpose of it is there, but how much people are aware? Because demoniac means it's not for the purpose of or recognizing or in line with the will of the Lord.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So many times people are just doing what they do, they don't even know. Mm-hmm. So then we call them innocent.
Yes.
And the ones that have that determination to avoid the Lord and that we would say then is the you know, the demonic or the atheistic nature. Does that make sense? So the point is theistic then would be better. But now if they're committed in theism that they don't want to accept the position of the Supreme Lord, that's also then not innocent.
Yes.
But if they you know, they don't know or they haven't thought about it or it's not, you know, they don't have a strong commitment against that, you could call innocent.
Yes.
So it's just a matter of in preaching then if you find that there's opportunity to discuss about the Lord and them to appreciate, then you do. And if not, you don't. Right? Because if you it's like how you say, the child sitting there just comfortably playing and being, you know, doing whatever foolish things they do, right? Now, if you give them a knife or something like that, it just gets worse. So that's the reason that one doesn't discuss. Because then, now they haven't even thought about it. Now you give them arguments that are against what they're saying, but then at the same time they use it, you know, to in their own. Like the child will take the knife and use it for playing. You know, so they'll take this information and use it to try to support their own philosophy, even though it still may be misapplied and not very logical, but they'll still entrench themselves more in the non-theistic view.
But the real Fal Maharaj, it is mixed.
Wherever is an area that they're open to, then that's what you cultivate. Like, let's say they don't like the philosophy, they just argue, but they like Prashad, or they like the Kirtan, then you just engage them like that, and by that purification, then the other will come. Or they like philosophy, but they don't like, you know, anything else, then you discuss that, or, you know, or they just like devotees, but they don't like anything, then you just, you know, that's there if it's mixed. Though unconscious, Prakriti can be the doer, as is the case with trees giving fruit and water flowing. Right? So it says the trees are giving fruit because they're saying the tree is unconscious, but they're actually very lightly conscious. Right? And water flowing, but the whole point is who's making the water flow? They're just thinking the water's doing that themselves? If that's the case, then why is it when you put down a bucket of water, it doesn't flow off? Right? So someone's putting it into motion. So they use an example that doesn't apply. You know, like the Mayavadis will say, the rope and the snake. You know, you think the rope is a snake, so it's illusion. So this material world's an illusion. But the point is why does the example work? Because there is such a thing as a rope, there is such a thing as a snake, and there is such a thing as making a mistake and considering one to be the other. So all that exists now, and then by that existing, now you're saying now it doesn't exist. You know, so that's the. Therefore, Pradhan is the material cause of the world and the maker, efficient cause of the world. Right. So material cause means the elements. The efficient cause means the one who actually gets it done. Siddhanta, Srila Vyasadeva refutes this proposition as follows. The Sutrakar denotes that sutras 1-5 emphasize the requisite of a conscious agent in the task of creation. Right? Because theirs goes through 10, no?
Yes,
Maharaj. 1-10. So the first time he's emphasizing the point of the need of a conscious agent. Yes.
It sounds like all these philosophies, they don't go beyond secondary creation. They don't know what happened on that side.
No, they'll get up to primary, but that's where it falls apart. So primary creation, it falls apart. So there may be very similar, exactly the same, up through the secondary.
Right.
Like that. And even aspects of sadhana and practices are always going to be, in the general, same, similar. It means the principles will be the same, and sometimes even details will be the same. Mm-hmm. Because it's like we said, you want to get from here to Calcutta, it's the same bus that goes, whether you're getting off at Krishnagar, Ranagat, or wherever. It's the same bus. So it's the same process, but they only accept up to that much. So that's why Krishna says there's only one path. Right? And so depending upon what they're accepting on the path and how much is how far they go, their philosophy goes. But they can never go all the way to the conclusion or up to Krishna because they don't accept Krishna. But the other way, that they can go very nicely all the way down to hell, because it's quite a, how you say, well paved.
It's a slot.
Yeah, it's quite. Yeah, I guess so many people using it's gotten really nice and shiny and smooth. Yes, so it's easy to go. Sutra 221. Rachanan nupa patesh cha nanu manam. Rachanad, construction, anupapattehe, on account of the impossibility, cha, and, na, not, anumanam, which is inferred. Oh, that which is inferred. It cannot be inferred that pradhan is the material and efficient cause, since creations do not take place without a sentient agent. And similarly of qualities and objects do not necessarily do not necessarily indicate a cause and effect relationship between them. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like this rock is shiny and this lota is shiny, so therefore, which one of them created the other? You know, it's yeah. Sutta Prakashika. Here the Shankyites, on the basis of inference, try to falsely establish the insentient pradhan as the material and efficient cause, failing to recognize the need of a sentient mediator. Earlier, the Sutrakar in Vedanta Sutra 1.4.24, Abhidya Upadeshach Cha, confirmed that Brahman is the efficient and material cause because of teachings about his desire to create. Right, so he's sentient, he has a purpose. So, and there's a desire, and so now it happens. Right, so the thinking, feeling, willing process, then there is action. But since pradhan doesn't think, feel, or will, then how will there be action? Hence, Brahman is the efficient conscious cause, unlike unconscious pradhan. Further sutras, Vedanta Sutra 1.4.26.27, Atmakrite Parinamat and Yonischa Gyate, describe Brahman as the material cause. Hence, since he transforms himself into the world and also is the womb of all created beings. Thus, Brahman in truth is both the efficient and the material. You know, we can say on one thing, he's the efficient, material world's the material cause. Right? Because it's made, the elements it's made out of. Is that, yeah. But, at the same time as, what is the material energy? It's a transformation of his energy. So factually, he is also the material cause. Right. But for, you know, generally the practical working, then we see is that material nature is doing that. But if you actually want to know, material nature comes from him. So sometimes you'll see it mentioned that he's the efficient, the material nature is the material, and other times you'll see that it's mentioned he's both. It just depends upon whether you're just looking at the mechanics of how it's going, or you're looking at actually how the ingredients for the mechanics came about. Right? Because material nature can only be the material cause if it exists. And how does it exist? It's a transformation of his Rup Shakti.
Sometimes they add the original cause.
Yes.
And then if original cause is Brahman, for example, efficient cause would be?
But do they use them all when they use original and efficient together, or are they synonyms?
Not them. We use that.
No, but I'm saying we use original and efficient together and material.
Sometimes there are four causes. Sometimes yeah. It's the jiva also, because of the desire.
Oh, okay, if you're looking at it from that aspect. Because he's the original or formal, then you have, it means he's the original, then you have the formal, which is internal potency. That transforms into the external potency,
material.
Which will be the material. And then the jiva, they become the instrumental. Like that. So, yeah. Sri Govindabhasya, Siddhanta. It cannot be inferred, Anuman, that insentient pradhan is the material cause of the universe, nor the efficient cause. Why? Because the variegated creations within the universe, Rachana, cannot be accomplished, Anupapatti, by something insentient. In the world as seen that building cannot be produced just by bricks, which have no consciousness. The word cha indicates that there is a fault in connection of cause and effect. Thus, simply because sattva, quality, is seen in the world, and pradhan also has sattva, that does not mean that pradhan is the material cause of the world. An external object like a pot is not endowed with intrinsic joy, since joy is an internal experience that occurs on seeing the pot. You know, especially if it's full of mishti doi or something, or rasgulla. Like. Furthermore, one does not perceive the pot as joy itself. It's not the pot, it's what's in the pot, right? Kapila maintains that joy, sorrow, and bewilderment appear in pradhan and are also observed in this world, right? So, see, they have to stretch it. Once you get this, then they have to overlay all kinds of things that make no sense. So we see it's aropia here. Right, you're overlaying onto something that it doesn't have. It's not important, but you try, because of your desire, then you try to extend. Footnote 4. Srila Prabhupada exterminates
explains.
Huh?
Yeah, exterminates.
Okay. Exterminates at length. Based on the current sutra, 221, the doctor of the Shankya school of thought and establishes the Vedanta conclusion that matter, which has no self-knowledge, cannot be the cause of the material creation. The ultimate creator is the Supreme Purusha. There are two kinds of research to find the original cause of creation. One conclusion is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-blissful, eternal, and all-knowing form, is indirectly the cause of this cosmic manifestation, and directly the cause of the spiritual world, where there are innumerable spiritual planets known as Vaikuntha, as well as his personal abode known as Goloka Vrindavan. So in here, when his Prabhupada is saying, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-blissful, eternal, all-knowing form. So we hear this a lot, and so Prabhupada's always, using that, sometimes just Personality of Godhead, sometimes these other aspects. But now within this, we see is that we may just think that they're just something that he's using to describe, but you see it's very specific, because in that quality there's the aspect of Anandamaya, right? And they'll take it as joy and that. So they're trying to attribute that to Brahman, to Pradhan, which it can't. So that's coming from the Lord, right? Then eternal, because then they'll think his form is temporary. No, it's eternal. All-knowing, because he is consciousness. He's pervading everything. So without consciousness, how can something, be created or not? So because he's conscious of everything, therefore he's the creator of everything. We're not conscious of everything. That's why we're limited in our what we can do. You see, so even though it's very nice and how Prabhupada puts it together so poetic, but that's the quality of the pure devotee. It's poetic. But it supports all the Vedantic points. Yeah. In other words, there are two manifestations, the material cosmos and the spiritual world. As in the material world, there are innumerable planets and universes. So in the spiritual world, there are also innumerable planets and universes, including the Vaikunthas and Goloka. The Supreme Lord is the cause of both the material and spiritual worlds. The other conclusion, of course, is that this cosmic manifestation is caused by an inexplicable, unmanifest void. This argument is meaningless. Because they can't explain it, it's not matter, it's just, because it's not there, then you can, but it could be. Right? Somebody said, how do you explain fantasy? Because it could be, well, maybe. And that's enough. So if that's enough for us to sit there for, so many hours, to read a book or watch a movie that's based on purely on fantasy that has no basis in anything. And that's all the more, this is stupid. No, but it could, Then, yeah. So, why wouldn't they be the same with the philosophy? Right? It's just because they have that desire, therefore, then someone says, okay, cool. The first conclusion accepted by the Vedanta philosophers, and the second is supported by the atheistic philosophical system of the Shankya Smriti, which directly opposes the Vedanta philosophical conclusion. Material scientists cannot see any cognizant spiritual substance that might be the cause of the creation. Such atheistic Shankya philosophers think that the symptoms of knowledge and living force visible in the innumerable living creatures are caused by the three qualities of the cosmic manifestation. Therefore, the Shankyites are against the conclusion of Vedanta regarding the original cause of creation. Right, so here it uses original. Right? So I think here means original just means what starts the whole process. Efficient means that you're actually making it work. It's just two aspects of the same. Okay. It's interesting here is that material scientists, so that, there's always been, so that means it means this atheistic Kapila, they're a materialistic scientist. Right? And so it's not that it's any different, because that's created by the modes. In other words, the creation is not created by the modes, it's by the Lord. Their philosophy is created by the modes. Like that. Factually, the Supreme Absolute Spirit Soul is the cause of every kind of manifestation, and He is always complete, both as the energy and as the energetic. The cause of manifestation is caused by the energy of the Supreme Absolute Person, in whom all energies are conserved. Philosophers who are subjectively engaged in the cosmic manifestation can appreciate only the wonderful energies of matter. Such philosophers accept the conception of God only as a product of the material energy. According to their conclusions, the source of the energy is also a product of the energy. Right, so again, then they have the problem. The energy is coming from the energy, you know, so.
Okay. Yeah. They are saying this.
Yes. Yeah. They're saying it's the same philosophy, you know, same thing. Soul comes from illusion, illusion comes from the soul. You know, the energy that's there is coming from the energy. You know, how does that work?
Right. Even though they're so intelligent, they cannot see those contradictions.
No. No, that's the whole point, because if they have a material desire. So desire is what will create the illusion.
So we can say that Maya covers them because of
yes,
this?
Yes, Maya covers them. So they're very intelligent. They may have a lifestyle. They'll live in goodness. They may have so much knowledge. They can use their intelligence. But the basis of their existence is actually ignorance, because they don't accept their position as the soul and their relationship with the Supreme Lord.
So can we say that they are, like Maya, Paritha, and Gyanas, they actually worse than Buddhas in a sense? Because they are less innocent? It's harder to convince them.
I mean, in one sense, they're all bad. Because if you get a really mudha, then they don't want to talk. They don't want to say what they're doing is all they want can handle, and they don't want to deal with anything else. So in that way, then, you know, they're very stubborn. But the Maya Pratigyana, if he makes up philosophies and starts speaking, that's when they become more dangerous. Like that. So all of them are dangerous. But here you see they're intelligent. They generally can have a more regulated lifestyle. They don't have to, as Descartes has proven. You know, then you can be totally, you know, how you say, a debauchee. You know, and you know, still have some intelligence left. So he must have karma. I can't imagine what he is in next life, right? You know, so the difficulty, yes. And then the asuras, naturally, they can make trouble because of their desire to influence, and they can create so much disturbance, like you see Jarasandha, you know, with all those kings and all the princesses and all the... He just, you know, like that. Though, you see, he has such respect for the brahmanas and all that, that he always worships them, listens, does everything for them. In fact, when Krishna and Arjuna and Bhima came to him dressed as brahmins, and then pointed out to him that one, you know, one lives eternally by the fame of, you know, the respect and charity to the Brahmins. And he thought of Bali Maharaj. And he knew he was tricked. But people are still talking about him. How long ago was that? Right? So that's, you know, you're talking about millions and millions, and he's still famous. And so then he decided at this point that even if, you know, it's going to be dangerous for him, he's going to fulfill their desire because he'll be famous for that. Yeah, you know, we're still talking about Jarasandha, you know, just by this conversation. You know, Karna also, just his charity and all that, because at the end he gave the benefits of all the charity to Krishna. You know, so, yeah, so like this for me. Where were we? There was some point to be made.
The original cause of creation, product of material.
Yeah, no, it goes back too far. You work so much to establish the point, the situation, which you can explain it, and then you forget what you were talking about. Okay.
But the source of the energy is also a product of the energy. The source of the energy is also a product of the energy. That is what it means.
Yeah. Factually, the Supreme Absolute. Okay, now we got that.
All honors is Krishna. Same paragraph.
Such philosophers wrongly observe that the living creatures within the cosmic manifestation are caused by the material energy, and they think that the Supreme Absolute Conscious Being must similarly be a product of the material energy. Right, because even in the modern context, then it'll be, you know, I think, what is it called? Anthropomorphism? Where man projects upon the, you know, need for a supreme and all that, and therefore the supreme has a form and does all this, because that's what they do. Mm-hmm. Right? So they still have the whole idea is that even the concept of God comes from material energy. You know, it comes from us. We come from material energy, all this. So, yeah. So these are standard mentalities. It's not that they change. It's not that, oh, well, this is the Vedic age, now it's different. No, it's exactly the same. Just they'll use different wordings. The logic may or may not be as good. They may or may not have as broad an understanding of all the various elements that are there, you know, and the mechanics of that, and gross and subtle. But the point is it's the same modes of nature. It's just a matter of how qualified they are. So modern scientists and Kapila, atheistic Kapila, they're both material scientists. He's just more qualified. He has a more fancy philosophy. Right? Since materialistic philosophers and scientists are too much engaged with their imperfect senses, naturally they conclude that the living force is a product of material combination, right? So that's the point. They're always engaging their senses. Say what they like, they don't mind engaging the senses. So therefore, they see everything back to the material energy. But the actual fact is the opposite. Matter is a product of spirit. According to the Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Spirit, the personality of Godhead, is the source of all energies. When one advances in research work by studying a limited substance within the limits of space and time, one is amazed by the various wonderful cosmic manifestations. And naturally, one goes on hypnotically accepting the path of research work or the inductive method. Right? So hypnotically, you're just accepting it without actually thinking about it. So that's the point, is that no matter how intelligent they are, they're intelligent up to a point. And then they just click into this hypnotic state, where they just accept it and go on. And one may say, no, but if they're true seekers and all that, yes, if they were true seekers and didn't accept it, they would not be accepted within the modern scientific or philosophical communities. Because you're accepted in the modern academy because you accept their specific, formulas. And then with that, you can play with that, but you can't ask about those formulas. Does that make sense?
Yeah. For example, the Big Bang is like that.
Yes. Like means now I've heard that there's some, just recently, that it's not quite as strong standing as it was.
Yes.
You know, like before, Einstein's theories, that was it. Then it starts to shift, and then it's not, and then someone else, and then it starts to... So it's constantly moving, but whatever is accepted today, if you don't speak that, you don't have a position. Does that make sense? So this idea is that if we adjust and then speak in a different way, then that academic community will accept us. That's zero possibility. It doesn't exist. It's a totally bogus concept. Because they only accept what they accept. And if you fully accept what they accept, they'll accept you, but then you'll be one of them. So the whole point is they can't accept anything outside of their purview. So they have it would be just like, let's say you have a game. You know, whatever it is. Let's take like rugby. Okay, it has rules. And so then you're considered you're playing rugby if you follow all the rules. But if you have a different game like cricket, it just doesn't match. It's just, you know, does that make sense? You know, and hence the 28, what is it, miles or between Dover and Calais. No? I'm not sure how you... The channel?
Yes.
So on one side is cricket and the other side is rugby.
It's not cricket in France.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Since there's the channel. Yeah, that's what I mean. The two don't mix like that. So that's the whole thing, is that there is no such thing, because they have set formulas. And those set formulas are created by the modes of nature. So therefore, how can you discuss the spiritual subject like that? Does that make sense? Now, an individual within the academy, they may be able to, in their personal time, use their intelligence to analyze and consider the philosophical points given by Vedanta. And they themselves may make a personal commitment to such knowledge. But as an academic or as a scientist, they can't. So that's the point, is you could save individuals of the academy, but you can't save the academy. You know, because it's only the academy because of its particular rules that it has. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the idea will influence the academy. No, you can influence individuals. The academy means if all the individuals are devotees, then the academy will just disappear.
Yes.
Like that. Yeah.
It means that in Vaikuntha there's no scientists.
There's no?
There are no scientists.
There's no scientists. Well, the main thing is there in the spiritual world, everybody has a perfectly blissful, eternal spiritual form. So there's no wheelchairs. So no, there can't be scientists. Why, you want to see guys in wheelchairs
no.
going around Vaikuntha or something? Or? The point is Vedanta philosophy, that's the real science. So they're all scientists. They're just not material scientists. Like that. You know, otherwise, if you get there and there's more material scientists, it's like, why did the... I remember it was, I think it was Ramachar Maharaj. They started bringing up these kind of funny, what do you call it, social issues and all that in a conversation. And he made it very clear that he left the university he was in, which is famous for that, to get away from that because he was looking for real answers. And he came to Krishna consciousness. So he's very disturbed that being in Krishna consciousness, now people would bring that nonsense with them and try to present it as actual valid points of discussion for a Vaishnava assembly. Yes, so. Yeah.
So Maharaj, can we say that the Rishi, who sees the truth, they are the spiritual scientists?
The Rishi is not just the, just means... That means the devotee. See, the thing is material scientist, it's an upadhi. It's a definition. Because a material scientist, you have to think in a certain way, do things in a certain way. It's a whole culture. It's a whole religion. Like that. But the Vaishnava religion, they have the knowledge of the scientists, in fact, beyond. Mm-hmm. But it's not an upadhi. And because of that, then you don't think of them as scientists. But you could say that many of these great rishis in that, they may be devotees in that, they can see much, but they're still identifying as rishis.
Oh, yes.
So then you could say they would be the spiritual scientists.
Yes.
But actually, any Vaishnava is a spiritual scientist because he understands the fundamentals. Now, as you see, is that the complexity of their philosophies up to the primary creation is quite great and would need great intelligence to appreciate. So from that side, from the just the material intelligence and the complexity and development of their system, then it's quite, you know, how you say, grand, you could say. But when it gets to the primary creation, that's where it falls apart. They have actually no understanding of it. But you see, even beginning devotee, yes. They know what's happening from that primary beyond. But you wouldn't classify them as a scientist as such, because scientist as an upadhi means very intelligent and analyzes everything and, you know, how you say,
yes. how to speak. And
yeah, like that. And so yes. That kind of is the thing. So we wouldn't identify, even though they are, mm-hmm. because the basis, the position that should actually be the basis of their even beginning their intellectual process is missing. Mm-hmm. So it's like they're having to create a philosophy without the source.
Yes. Yes.
You know, yes. Like that. You know, it's like trying to create a machine without electricity. Mm-hmm. Right? It just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, well, the Vaishnavas have the electricity. Now, whether they care for the machine or not is another thing, but they have electricity.
Yes.
Well, they have machines, but no electricity.
So we need to work together.
Yeah, we could try that. Problem is if you work together, they'll win.
Like in today, that the weapons that we use are very gross, whereas earlier they were invoking using mantras. So
yes.
They are greater scientists.
Yes, the greatest scientists before. So you can imagine what would happen if you could invoke atomic weapons by mantra in the modern age. There'd be nothing left. You know? Like that. Yeah, it'd just be like, you know, how you say, the father comes home from work, drives up to the driveway, and all there is this little pile of ash there, you know, like that, you know, still smoking. And he stops the car and bewildered looks over at the neighbor and says, yeah, you know, they all, you know, used the Brahmastra and they all killed each other, right? And blew up the house. The only one left was the dog, right?
The deductive way of understanding.
Through the deductive way of understanding, however, one accepts the Supreme Absolute Person, the personality of Godhead, as the cause of all causes, who is full with diverse energies and who is neither impersonal nor void. The impersonal manifestation of the Supreme Person is another display of his energy. Therefore, the conclusion that matter is the original cause of creation is completely different from the real truth. The material manifestation is caused by the glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is inconceivably potent. Material nature is electrified by the Supreme Authority, and the conditioned soul within the limits of time and space is trapped by awe of the material manifestation. In other words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually realized in the vision of a material philosopher and scientist through the manifestations of his material energy, like as we were saying before in other points, that there is only Krishna, and so everybody is worshipping Krishna and appreciating Krishna. It's just that they don't know it's Krishna. They don't attribute it to Krishna. Right? That's the whole point. So the material scientists, they appreciating Krishna through his material energy. So the various manifestations that he has of his material energy, they respect that, they worship that. You know, the artists, everybody, they just have something that they really appreciate about the material nature. But that all that nature is Krishna, it's his energy. Right? And because of that, then they do nicely, that's why they progress in their field. Right? You worship Krishna as his material energy in the scientific form, then you progress in that field. But you'll always have questions you can't answer in that field until you accept the personality of Godhead. There'll always be questions. Right? In other words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually realized in the vision of a material philosopher and scientist through the manifestations of his material energy. For one who does not understand the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his diverse energies because of not knowing the relationship between the source of the energies and the energies themselves, there is always a chance of error, which is known as vivarta. As long as materialistic scientists and philosophers do not come to the right conclusion, certainly they will hover above the material field. bereft a proper understanding of the absolute truth. And vivarta means?
Vivartavad, like we saw that.
No, just the word. That's illusion, no? Vivarta is illusion? Yes, okay. Oh, vivartavad means the whole world's illusion. Yeah, so they'll always remain an illusion. The great Vaishnava philosopher Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan has very nicely explained the materialistic conclusion in his Govinda Bhasya, a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. He writes as follows. The Shankya philosopher Kapila has connected the different elementary truths according to his own opinion. Material nature, according to him, consists of the equilibrium of the three material qualities, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Material nature produces the material energy known as mahat, and mahat produces the false ego.
Right. But this equilibrium of three modes of nature, we accept that?
Means that's there, but it's not that anything happens. If it's equally balanced, what would cause it to go out of balance? Because if by pradhan, by nature, is everything's balanced.
Not only the guna.
Yeah, everything's balanced. They only look at that aspect because that's what's working. But the point is it's everything is just homogeneously there. So it's just like in perfect ignorance. You know, like the mano opens. There's that, you know, it's you're just this unknown, unlimited kind of, you know, thing that you can't be understood. But then from that, the Lord, means the Lord then shows forth in his brilliance, and then from that he starts the whole creation. So he's there before he starts the whole thing by his glance. The ego, okay. Material nature produces a material energy known as mahat, and mahat produces the false ego. The ego produces the five objects of sense perception, which produce the 10 senses, 5 for acquiring knowledge and 5 for working. The mind and the 5 gross elements. Okay, so all that comes from these, right? Like if you have taste, then from taste you'll get the tongue, and you'll also get water. Counting the Purusha, or the enjoyer, with these 24 elements. There are 25 different truths, right? Purusha meaning the?
Jiva.
Jiva. Yes.
We don't count the Jiva.
You can in the conditioned state, but we generally don't need to. Because we're talking about the material energy. But they count it as there because they come from Prakriti. Well, we know they don't. The non-manifested state of these 25 element truth is called Prakriti, or material nature. The qualities of material nature can associate in 3 different stages, namely, as the cause of happiness, the cause of distress, and the cause of illusion. Right, so goodness, passion, ignorance. The quality of goodness is the cause of material happiness. The quality of passion is the cause of material distress. And the quality of ignorance is the cause of illusion. Our material experience lies within the boundaries of these 3 manifestations of happiness, distress, and illusion. For example, a beautiful woman is certainly a cause of material happiness for one who possesses her as a wife. But the same beautiful woman is a cause of distress to a man whom she rejects or who is the cause of her anger. And if she leaves a man, she becomes the cause of illusion. The 2 kinds of senses are 10 external senses. And the 1 internal sense, the mind. Thus there are 11 senses. According to Kapila, material nature is eternal and all-powerful. Originally there is no spirit, and matter has no cause. Matter itself is the chief cause of everything. It is the all-pervading cause of all causes. The Shankya philosophy regards the total energy, Mahatattva, the false ego and the 5 objects of sense perception, as the 7 diverse manifestations of material nature. Right, the total material energy, Mahat, the false ego, and the 5 objects of sense perception. Right, so the Tanmatras, because from them comes everything else. So then if you have these, then you get everything. Right? Okay. So these seven are the diverse manifestation of material nature, which has two features, known as the material cause and efficient cause. The Purusha, the enjoyer, is without transformation. Right, so we'll say that also. Right? The Purusha is without transformation. So they'll catch bits from the philosophy, you know, from the Shastra, but they'll put it together in some kind of strange way.
So that's why we say that little knowledge is even more dangerous?
Yeah, can be. Yeah. Whereas material nature is always subject to transformation. But although material nature is inert, it is the cause of enjoyment and salvation for many living creatures. Its activities are beyond the conception of sense perception, even though it's made out of the same thing, so how can it be beyond? Right? Like that. But still one may guess at them by superior intelligence. Material nature is one, but because of the interaction of the three qualities, it can produce the total energy and the wonderful cosmic manifestation. Such transformations divide material energy into two features, namely the efficient and material causes. The Purusha, the enjoyer, is inactive and without material qualities. Okay, so that's the fun point. He's inactive in that he's actually transcendentally situated. And so he's actually not performing anything. Material energy is doing it. Mm-hmm. So that aspect of the soul's inactive is correct. But that things are going on, the transformations are happening there is because of the living entity's desire, therefore, through the modes of nature, the karma and all these things, manifestations are there. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting how Prakriti, which is unconscious and inactive, they're making that's the active one. And the soul, who is conscious, they're the inactive one. Mm-hmm. So they're replacing the soul, the qualities that are there for Vishnu, on the soul.
That's pure ignorance.
Yes. So it means you see is that, and then other qualities of the Lord they're attributing to material nature. Mm-hmm. So they're basically, because you need to have all three, the jiva, the material nature, and the Lord, to understand the full equation. They just drop the Lord out of it and then take those qualities and divide them up between the two. Right? You know, so they're intelligent, they can see something matches. And, you know, where it says Purusha, what it should mean Vishnu, then they're taking as the jiva. Right? And then some things are just too far beyond, then they attribute that to the material energy. So how much they're interested in, that goes to the jiva. How much is beyond what they can do, it means if you're being realistic, then they'll attribute that to the material energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
One statement, it is told that the Prakriti becomes the qualities get mutual exchange. The Prakriti becomes the enjoyer and the jiva becomes the conscious and the jiva becomes the enjoyer, something it mentioned.
Mm. Yeah. Maybe that's coming up. But yeah, they have all these. That's what they have to do because it doesn't make sense. So then they just think long enough, and by the modes of nature, because they're worshipping Krishna as this, you know, in this form of bogus philosophy, then Krishna, they put in the effort and all that, then he reciprocates. Then they are able to put this together, but it's still by the modes of nature. It makes sense. Yeah.
Maharaj, can we say that since there is a many level of consciousness, that we can have many philosophies as consciousness?
Means in general or means an individual? Yes, well, that's how they come up. Because you have all these levels of consciousness, and then you have all these levels of consciousness, and you have, all the different desires, all these things, so you actually have for all these different aspects that will be there. And so then you see the Vedic philosophers, basically they would deal with, you know, with Manamoy and Vijnanamoy. They would talk about Anandamoy, but basically all of them are not going to get there.
Yes.
Like that. And so, but, you know, yeah. Brahmavadis may, but the others aren't. And we see in the modern context, and it's all basically anamoy and pranamoy. Same kind of concepts, but just applied at a lower level of consciousness. So for a lower level of consciousness, you don't need, like in the, you need the Vedic rules, you need that whole hierarchy up to the primary creation. Like that. But if you're just working on social and economic and judicial kind of concepts, you don't need anything beyond yourself as an authority. So you don't require the Vedas. So you don't have to go up to that level of consciousness to be effective. Right? So your world is just in the pranamoy. You don't go outside of that. So anything outside of that, then they'll say, oh, that's just, you know, yeah, mythology, this, that, it's not necessary. Why? Because their desire is the concrete, is the reality. And facts aren't actually what's concrete. That's the abstract. So the supreme absolute truth will be the most abstract for them. Like that. Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Okay, the Purusha, the enjoyer, is inactive and without material qualities, although at the same time, he is the master, existing separately in each and every body as the emblem of knowledge. By understanding the material cause, one can guess that the Purusha, the enjoyer, being without activity, is aloof from all kinds of enjoyment or superintendence. Shankya philosophy, after describing the nature of Prakriti, material nature, and Purusha, the enjoyer, asserts that the creation is only a product of their unification or proximity to one another, like what you were saying. There. So it's because they're near each other, that's why it's happening. But then the point is then where does the jiva come from? You know, so it's again that same problem that comes up, is that creation happens because of the proximity of Purusha and Prakriti, but where does Purusha come from and why would there be action? You know, like that. So it's that's where it falls apart. When they get back to that point of Pradhan and then trying to explain everything based on that, then it all falls apart.
But shouldn't they just explain it normally, logically from the beginning? Why it falls apart when we take it back?
Because that's the point. They only discuss the beginning. They don't discuss this point here. They, unless someone brings it up, they're not going to talk about it. Because this is the point that they themselves. I don't know if there's various branches of Shankya philosophy, but like in the Mayavad school, there's different branches, and it's transformed, you know, since Shankara, and it's based on these points, where we're pointing out the weakness. Then trying to resolve that weakness, they come up with another basis. So even though they're all Mayavadis, and accept that, and their lifestyle and everything's the same, but the basis on how their Mayavad philosophy is working, they shift. Because of these difficulties that are there, it can't actually be explained. So because they have material consciousness, they'll never actually understand the absolute truth unless they, you know, hear from the bona fide source. So they come up with something that intellectually makes sense to them. It means the modes of nature reveal something, and that way then you get a new school of this philosophy. So whether they have different branches trying to resolve these things or not, then that I can't say. You know, it's just like you could say, even let's say it's a contemporary example, you take Christianity. So in Christianity you have, you could say, four major groups. You know, you have your Protestant, your Catholic, your Orthodox, and your Oriental. Right? Then within them, they'll have so many breakdowns. Now, some of them, it'll be some certain practices on that, but these main differences between these sections, and sometimes within these sections, if they have breakdowns, which at least the Western church does. The Eastern, I've heard, doesn't have so much of a problem like that. But the Western church does. Is that it's all on the principle of how God is Jesus. That's the whole thing. All their it's all on that point. And so as you go along, and they all accept, in other words, they all accept it up to a particular point. But at one point, that was where it divided between the East and Church and the West Church. So then between Constantinople and Rome. And then from there, then they divide more, and then some of the Protestant, they go back to some of the earlier ones, like that, but now they don't use that particular religious process they use, so it comes out as a whole different religion, like this, and you know, so like that, it's all on this simple point on how God is Jesus. So they're always trying to make it, you know, you can't say he is God, because he has to be the Son of God, but if you say he's not, then, you know, then that's wrong. So anything that goes too far this way or that way, they try to get rid of. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah, and so it's just a matter of...
And everybody has their own opinion.
Yeah, and they all have their own opinions. But if you want a place to stay, you have to have the opinion of that particular monastery, you know. So, otherwise, then you can go out on the road and have your own opinion. And like that, you're fine.
Maharaj, like when we have, you know, these categories, as you mentioned about the Christianity, the four ones, so like they are enemies of each other and they have rivalry. But in case of like the Shri's, you know, when they have the two categories, the North and the South, and Tengalism and Kalais, but they agree. Some differences they may have, but they may not like be enemies of each other as such. In case of Vedantists.
And then them and the Madhvas? Yeah. So it means they may not have, there's a breakdown in it, and they can be friends amongst the Shri's, the North and the South, but it means they're all accepting Vishnu as supreme, they're all accepting Ramanuja as the Acharya and his teachings. So that's all common. But they won't marry into each other's families, they won't do all these things. You're not, Wadagalai is not going to ask a Tendagalai to come over and do the wedding or anything like that. So as far as practical application goes, they're two separate worlds. But if a Yajaman has invited all of them there and they're all going to get dakshin, then they'll all be there.
What about the Madhvas? They don't accept each other?
What?
Madhvas, they don't like each other?
The Madhvas and the Shris, not so much. Like that. I think the Shris are more tolerant of the Madhvas. I think the Madhvas are less tolerant of the Shris. I think it more comes from that side. But you do have the aspect, because Madhvas don't have a problem dealing with demigods, because they know demigods are just the potency is coming from the Lord, while the Shris won't go near them. Like the Madhvas will offer respects to them. They won't worship, but they'll offer respect. Shris just, you know, if they're walking down the street and there's on one side of the street a demigod temple, they'll go to the other side of the street and walk there. Yeah, you know, so it's just, you know, so it just keeps everything very clean and very nice. So it's just a difference in the mood and flavor. So their flavors are very different. But they're all Vaishnavas and bona fide, so when it comes to, if it's about the Mayavadis, then they're all on the same side. Who?
Madhvas and Shri?
Depends. Individuals like us, individuals don't. You know, yeah, like that. With such unification of the living symptoms, with such unification means the proximity of
the
Purusha and Prakriti. The living symptoms are visible in material nature. But one can guess that in the person of the enjoyer, the Purusha, there are powers of control and enjoyment. When the Purusha is illusion for one of sufficient knowledge, he feels himself to be the enjoyer. And when he is in full knowledge, he is liberated. In the Shankya philosophy, the Purusha is described to be always indifferent to the activities of Prakriti.
It's them or us?
That's them.
This is all theirs.
Himself, the enjoyer, it's all about the
jiva. It means that you'll see here that there's elements that you can see it's based on points that we've made, but they've taken it out of context. That's what we were saying before. We always have to be careful of that, is that that's the point of the fineness of the Vedanta approach, is that one can tell those differences. You know? Because otherwise, then if you can't tell those differences, then they're very dangerous, because they look similar. Like that. The Shankya philosopher accepts three kinds of evidences, namely direct perception, hypothesis, and traditional authority. When such evidence is complete, everything is perfect. The process of comparison is within such perfection. Beyond such evidence, there is no proof. There's not much controversy regarding direct perceptional evidence or authorized traditional evidence.
Authorized traditional evidence would be Shankya?
Yes. So hypothesis is anuman.
So they accept three.
Yes, the same like us. Yeah. Yeah. But so that's the thing, is that you'll have many times commonalities, because it's based on the Veda. There has to be something in common, right? You know, it's just like different. Let's say you go to Paris. There's different fashion designers there, you know, and for all of them, you know, generally pants have two legs. But, you know, I'm sure they'll come up with one where there's one leg and the other one's not there. But I haven't seen it yet, but I'm sure someone will do it. Right? So the point is it's there. So they're all based on the same points. Fabric, how it works, the human body, you know, the different, the color schemes, the fabrics that are there, the textures that are there, the combinations that are there. But how they do that and everything is very different. And each one does not like the other one. Like that. But they might agree on one thing if they both dislike a third person.
Yes.
So if they think it's trash, then they'll both agree on that. But of course, each other, then not. So like that, you always have.
When they say that the Purusha is described to be indifferent to the activities of Prakriti, so even we say the same thing, then we can get liberation.
Yes. They say it's always indifferent, because the point is the soul is always liberated. But the point is that coming under the illusion of thinking I'm the controller and enjoyer, that's where the problem comes. So you see that they're reflecting that same kind of philosophy. But the thing is where does that come from? So they've gotten it from the material energy, but the material energy as the one who's doing it, rather than the Lord puts them under the control of the material energy, and then the modes of nature are doing the work. So we see is that it's like trying to explain the same philosophy as ours without the Lord's involvement. So it'll have certain times the wording, the concepts will be very similar, but you see in there the Lord is always left out. So that's what one has to catch. So if you just add the Lord in, then it'll work. Then it'll be Vedanta. Because the point is the Vedic philosophy is Vedanta. If you don't accept it, then you can get these other schools. Right? And in fact, if even you don't accept the personal form, you can even take Vedanta and interpret it in an impersonal way. Right? There's not much controversy regarding direct perceptional evidence or authorized traditional evidence. The Shankya system of philosophy identifies three kinds of procedures, namely parinama, transformation, samanvayat, adjustment, and shakti-taha, performance of energies, as the causes of the causing manifestation. That's what we were seeing in the beginning.
Yes.
That's it. Because of the limited size, these are products of Prakriti, which is unlimited. But then the point is Prakriti not being conscious, then it has to have a source, which is the Lord. Right? So, but they leave the Lord out. Because they are similar, samanvayat, because they are similar to predominant qualities, the other elements are its products. But the jiva is consistent with the Lord, and the Lord is then the cause of the pradhan from the previous one. A shakti tasta, because it's inherent shakti, Prakriti can be the efficient cause under the guidance of the Lord. So in that way you can say he's the original cause, then she would be the efficient cause. And then they then come down to the material. But the point is it's a transformation of his energy, so in actuality then the material energy is only a transformation of him, so therefore he is actually all these causes. So they leave that out and they just try to make sense out of this. That's why certain parts of it are the same, but other parts of it just don't work. So that's the point, is that why you would want to use something with, you know, it's like having a nice car without a motor. Like that. You could say, no, but the car, it's great, look at the tires, you know, look at this, look at the upholstery, you know, like that. And, you know, the design, it's very, you know, aerodynamic, but nothing's going to happen without the engine. So, therefore, if you add the engine, then that's what we're presenting. So one doesn't need to go through theirs, because you'd have to strip away so much of their philosophy and sutras to get down to the essence. And even you get rid of those things that are incorrect and kept only what's correct, it still doesn't answer. So when you add in all the points that answer, it's Vedanta.
If you note over here that these three are the Sankhya Sutras, and Prabhupada is
these three are
the Sankhya Sutras. We read that, you know, in the synopsis.
Yes.
And Prabhupada is very well aware of the Sarayak Sutras also. He's quoting that.
Yes, yes. So Prabhupada knows all these things.
Yeah.
Is what Prabhupada knows. People don't know that he knows. She's like, this means, where is this purport from?
This is from Sisi. Adilila.
Adilila, okay. So.
Last page. It goes on.
Really? It's a huge purport. It's one of those famous purports.
Last page.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, Adilila 6, 14 through 15. Yeah. So all these things are being explained there. So people, it's not understood how much what Prabhupada knows. That's the thing, is that's what we're saying about Vaishnavas, because it's not an identity. You don't take him as a scholar. You know, because it's not an identity, you don't take him as a chef. Or it's not an identity, you don't take him as a manager. You know. Like this, or a musician, or anything like that. But whatever area he's working in, it's the best there is. The materialist can't come up to that, you know, that standard. It's so special and unique. So, but Prabhupada was, because it's not an identity, then he can present it in, you know, seemingly lay language. While if someone's a scholar, they cannot do that. It freaks them out. They can't use simple words. But it doesn't give them their taste of using fancy words. Because it's a taste using fancy words. You know, like some people like to sit around and discuss, you know, like Shakespeare. Because of the language, because of this and that. And so it's something that others don't get a taste from. So it's a matter of taste, that they identify as a scholar and they get a taste from being a scholar. But Prabhupada doesn't have material desire, so there's no identity as a scholar and no taste in being a scholar. So therefore, what language is actually going to be useful for preaching? Right? So we use this. Well, if he spoke like, you see, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he speaks like a scholar. Because in those days, you spoke like a scholar, people respected you. They don't know what you're saying, you must be great. Right? Like that guy, that big industrialist. Like that, he had all the works of one of the Indian sadhus, and he says he must be, he's so great because I read his work, I can't understand anything he's saying. So it must be, therefore it's a symbol that it's transcendental. So in those days, then, you would be respected if you could speak like how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur spoke. Even if they didn't understand you. But nowadays they can't understand you, they just don't care. So Prabhupada then speaks how people can understand. Right? And then those who identify as scholars, they'll say, oh, it's not here, and then they look in other books to get that scholarly taste. Oh, it's not explained here. What do you mean it's not explained? It means this purport has probably been read many, many times. But only because we've studied Vedanta Sutra, we're actually catching what Prabhupada's saying here. Otherwise, we'd just say, oh yeah, okay, what's the big deal? But the significance of all these points is coming out, and Prabhupada's mentioning them. So he understands all this. So that's the reason we're reading the Acharya's book so that you can appreciate what Prabhupada's saying. Right? Does that make sense? So this course is on Prabhupada's books. But to get a full understanding, we're reading what the Acharyas are saying so that you can get that appreciation. So,
yeah. Also, Maharaj, one thing to note is that Prabhupada has translated the sutras as one word, otherwise it was one statement when he read previously. So he's the most scholarly, Prabhupada.
Yes, yes. Transformation, adjustment, and performance of energies, right? Because then they have this whole sutra, right? And that means the Shankya means the Kapila had taken this whole concept and got it down to the sutra, and Prabhupada just condenses it down to one word. Right? So who's smart here? Right? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.